Hey everyone, this is Jamie Bateman. Real quickly, I wanted to share with you something that's been pivotal in the growth and success of my businesses, and that is my partnership with Haven Financial Services. I've been working with Haven for over a year now. Christine Valdez was on episode 70 of this podcast, so go check that out if you want to hear her story. It was a fantastic personal story for sure, but Haven has been awesome. They provide me with monthly reports that are super clear and discernible, and that provides me with clarity and focus so that I can do what I do best, which is running my businesses, not preparing financial reports. Again, if you're in the market for a top-notch financial service company, or if you just want to check one out, go to www.jamiebateman/haven and check out Haven Financial Services. Again, that's jamiebateman/haven. Can't recommend them enough. Christine and her team have been fantastic. So I definitely recommend you check out Haven Financial Services at www.jamiebateman/haven. Let's get back to the show. In this episode, you're going to get the chance to hear from Nick Edwards, who is a former collegiate and professional athlete. Nick went through several periods of adversity that we highlight, two big periods of adversity we highlight on the show. One where he got injured in college and, you know, his entire identity was kind of rocked to the core. And then one much later, after he was an MMA fighter for 10 years, where he in business was very close to filing for personal bankruptcy and did file for bankruptcy on the business side. So he's was very close to losing his own residence, had a lot of success, and then really lost it all. And now has rebuilt and is working along with some big name athletes and just well-known people. They're going to have some big announcement at the Super Bowl here in 2025. And it's really, really exciting what they're working on. Nick has partnered with Marcus Colston, a former NFL athlete, among others. And they started a company called Champion Venture Partners. And he gets into the specifics of that. It's really, really cool. They deal with real estate and a lot of other asset classes that they invest in. And a lot to do with sports. But really the big takeaway from this episode, I think you'll really enjoy, is having an abundance mentality and just staying true to your core and your mission and understanding where you want to go. And also, one thing that Nick reiterates over and over on the show is that one-to-many approach, not just serving one person at a time, but really taking your message and your impact to as many people as possible. So what you're going to get from this episode are inspiration and practical guidance. Inspiration based on the fact that Nick went through health adversity, identity adversity, as well as financial adversity. And those are a lot of people can relate to that. And we walk through how he navigated that from a mental fitness standpoint. But also he offers an opportunity to get on their waiting list to invest alongside Nick and his partners in the venture that they have going on. And that's for both accredited and non-accredited investors. This one packs a punch. You're going to love it.
Welcome to From Adversity to Abundance, the go-to podcast for real estate entrepreneurs seeking not just to thrive, but to conquer with resilience and mental sharpness. Each week, join us as we dive into the compelling world of real estate through the lens of mental fitness, where challenges transform into opportunities. Get ready to transform your mindset and expand your understanding of what it takes to succeed in real estate. Let's explore these stories of triumph and resilience together.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the From Adversity to Abundance podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Bateman, and I'm pumped today to have with us Nick Edwards. Nick is a former collegiate and professional athlete who's focused on investing, and we'll get into the specifics of in more detail about that. But Nick, how are you doing today?
Good. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. This is going to be a lot of fun. You have a really interesting background, and there's different rabbit holes that we're going to have to figure out if we want to go down or not, but it's definitely going to be a different episode, very unique compared to a lot of the others that we've had. So briefly for the listener, Nick, who may be unfamiliar with you, dive into a little more detail up front as to who you are today and what you're really focused on today.
So I guess, backing up a hair. I am actually a Minnesota native, and then I live in Denver, Colorado now. Like you said, I was actually a collegiate athlete, tore my ACL playing college football. That killed the dream. And then I went into MMA for quite a few years and had success there. But, when you're in a sport like that, you realize, unless you are really naive, you realize you can't get punched in the face forever. Transition out of sports somehow. And for me, I actually really clung onto the combination of sports and medicine. And so went into school for physiology and then worked with pro teams after that. Slowly but surely continued kind of on the path of investing where I was running different SPVs. I was an angel investor and LP in funds to ultimately now where I'm a general partner in a fund where we invest up and down the sports asset class. So everything from emerging leagues and teams to real estate and real estate adjacent sports. So think stadiums, STRs, even residential area around stadiums, and even sports adjacent like ski hills, golf, surf areas, really kind of that nexus between where sports connects to where you're going to stay. And so I've been doing this now for quite a while, and we're continuing to build the largest retail investor-friendly sports firm in the country.
That's awesome. I didn't tell you this before we hit record, but I am also a former collegiate athlete and didn't tear my ACL, frankly, luckily, but did have deal with some injuries. And also, not that the at this point it's pretty much irrelevant, but I majored in sports management and took a lot of the kinesiology and physiology courses, anatomy and all that. And man, I should have just stuck with business management, to be honest with you. It was those are no joke, I'll tell you that. Those are tough classes, but I love the nexus of sports and investing for sure. And I think I can hopefully add some value along the way here as well. So I know, Nick, it sounds exciting, everything you're doing now, and the future is bright. But I know that it hasn't always been easy to get here. Not just the college injury, but I know you've also faced some financial struggles as well in the past, and you've also done some active real estate investing. So let's jump back into your backstory and walk back through chronologically. Where would you like to start?
I think we could even start, at that point where I tore my ACL in college. Because for me, it's quite interesting because the adversity side, I've always had an abundance mindset, but really the adversity is there. And if you're an athlete, you're used to taking some losses and then having to find a way to get back up. And it's how you get back
Absolutely.
up.
I think that's a, I mean, that is right there. Just, we could stop the episode because I'm kidding, but you're absolutely right. It's critical to have an abundance mindset, but knowing that adversity will come, right? You're going to face additional adversity. So am I. So is our listener. So it doesn't just stop just because you have an abundance mindset. It just helps you get through it and maybe navigate it in a smarter, more, innovative way and create a better outcome, hopefully. So, okay. So you tear your ACL. So walk us, put us there. What happened? What sport was this? Where were you? What happened?
So I was at NDSU, so go Bison. It's interesting. People don't really understand what it's like to be an athlete. They just see, what they see on TV and kind of make some assumptions. But what people don't understand is when you get injured or you transition out of sport, most folks don't choose when that happens.
So
So like
true.
in my case, I got injured and there goes everything. Your scholarship is gone, your team is gone, your tutors are gone. Everything that you once had literally disappears overnight. And
Absolutely.
so for me, that was very much a woe is me, what am I going to do with my life? And
Yeah.
you
No,
pick yourself back up.
just quickly to, empathize, I guess. I competed at a fairly high level in Division III lacrosse, and our season was abruptly ended in overtime. Nobody cares anymore, but the fact is, it ended more abruptly than I expected, and all of a sudden my entire identity was just in question. Who am I anymore, right? And we've also had I've had Josh Kalinowski on the show. He was a Major League Baseball pitcher for about with the Colorado Rockies, and he got injured. And in his first year, he got injured, and it's your career's over. But it's not just the money or the physical pain or the rehab. It's like, who am I, right? So it's much bigger than just an ACL tear, right? So what's going through your mind at that point as everything starts to slip away?
Well, it's a weird complex because, by the way, I'm about 6 foot 205, so I'm not that big of a person, but you couldn't have told me whatsoever when I was in college that I wasn't going to play in the league, right? So
Sure.
I wouldn't have listened to it. So when you go from I'm going to play in the league to it's gone, that's a really steep change. So in my mind is really that identity. It's the what am I going to do now? It's everything changes literally overnight.
Yeah.
And so for me, lucky enough, I was a wrestler in high school and I was a pretty decent wrestler. And I had my old wrestling coach reach out to me and say, "Hey, Nick, you should try MMA." And I'm like, "No, I have no interest in doing that. I don't want to get punched. This sounds terrible. Like, I'm good
Right.
with pads, but not something where I'm going to be put in a cage." And
Yeah.
he said, "Just try it, see what you think. Come to one practice." And I was like, "Ah, okay." So I went to one practice, and then it was literally like the movie Fight Club. I was hooked. I'm like, "This is awesome. This is exactly the future." And so I gravitated to that really hard. And so
Nice.
stayed there for, I think it was just shy of 10 years in the career.
Oh, wow. That's a long time. I mean, that's not an easy thing to hang in there for. So, but I will say, I think wrestlers in general probably are some of the toughest people on planet Earth. So there's a mental element there that, we're not gonna have time to go into, but just to be a wrestler for quite some time and then add on to that MMA. So, what's the takeaway for the listener there in that transition period from, where everything slipped away as far as your collegiate and potentially your professional career, and then transitioning to MMA. What's the takeaway there for the listener?
Every inflection point, you have a choice. At the end of the day, you can choose to be a victim and just sit there and woe is me, or you can get up and do something about it. It's literally what it comes down to.
Love that. So, you can't control whether you tear your ACL or not, right? And there's a lot outside of your control in this life, right? So, but opportunities will present themselves if you're looking for them and you have the right mindset. Okay, so 10 years, walk us through kind of after that 10 years, what happened after the 10 years in MMA?
Yeah, so I had my I got to a point where I was top 100 in my weight class, and then I took fifth at Worlds in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and I said, "You know what? That's it. That's the career." And during that time, I was actually studying for physiology, and so I knew that I was going to transition out of sport, and I knew I couldn't do it forever. And so, I felt that just that pull to working in athletics, and I've always had this mindset of I want to help others, and it's not necessarily that I can help somebody on a one-to-one basis, but how do I spread what I know to one to many? And so I knew I wanted to work with teams. I wanted to kind of keep pushing that forward. And so then I went into physiology and worked with NFL and NHL teams. And doing that, it actually really quickly opened up another door for me where I'm like, again, I'm doing a one to many, but how do we take this tech, the stuff that I'm working with on a day-to-day basis that the outside world doesn't see, and how do we scale it? I'm like, how do we scale it so that it's not just a one to many? We're talking one to thousands to tens of thousands and keep this thing going, push that snowball down the hill. And so then I jumped into the founder seat. And along that way, kind of like I mentioned, I ran different SPVs. I had very good success working with medical professionals and kind of designing medical workflows, helping them scale different intellectual properties and get it to market and product market fit. And then ultimately, kind of combining the intersection of the two in wellness so that it's bricks and mortar facilities and back to the real estate side, as well as then being in that founder seat and helping kind of drive new products and innovations into that ecosystem.
Interesting. So yeah, talk a little bit more about that company. What was the intent? How long was it around for? How did that go? The wellness company.
Yeah, so this is definitely where the we'll call it part two of adversity kicks in. So it was around for just shy of 4 years. I will tell you, started to feel the pain points of death by indigestion versus starvation, where we
Okay.
just couldn't keep up. And so you learn really quickly where you're at, whether you're undercapitalized, overcapitalized, or doing the right thing. And, for me, really kind of growing in this, I had some pretty successful exits and I was doing very well on the medical side. So I got in over my skis and I said, "You know what? We can build this fast." And so I put my name on the line for personal guarantees of facilities and pieces that we purchased, and then scaled and started to scale fast, but again, dive indigestion with how much was coming at us.
What year was this, or years are we talking?
So we're talking 17 to then the swan song was kind of with a lot of companies that April of 2020.
Gotcha. Okay, so I guess I'll ask the same thing, you know, with the round two, your adversity part two. What's the takeaway for the listener from that, you know, from that experience you had?
You know, I think there's a lot of experiences I had, because ultimately what ended up happening was, because it's a wellness company, we ended up shutting down and shuttering doors because of the government mandates. And that really was a quick stop to revenue.
Wow.
And when you are a machine that is basically built on recurring revenue, you have
Yeah.
to find other sources. So there's a combination of learnings here. I could go on from, you know, what it looks like from the undercapitalization side to the personal leverage to then choosing the right staff versus partners in there. At the end of the day, I would say my biggest takeaway from it is know where your personal leverage starts and stops. So again, you have a choice, right? Kind of like what I said, the first
Yeah.
adversity, you can be the victim or you can choose to go on.
Right.
That can also bite you in the butt really quickly if you decide
Yeah.
to go on with your own pocketbook. And so
Yes.
that's a big defining factor that people can hopefully
Sure.
avoid, by my experience.
Yeah, no, I've been in different situation, but I've been there with one particular company where I was a little too stubborn and optimistic and just wouldn't quit. And I think a lot of that comes from sports and just, you know, you work hard and you do well or whatever that, but at some point earlier, I should have realized that, you know, seen acknowledge the writing on the wall and probably stop throwing my own capital into this. And I think, and I don't want to, you know, put words into your mouth, but we were trying to scale too quickly and didn't do enough market testing, you know, to get make sure that the demand was there. And trying to build out this infrastructure where it's like build it and they will come, and we just and we they didn't come. So it was a little different reasons because yours was a global pandemic and then government intervention that sounds like it didn't help. So what happened to you from the you know personal from a personal standpoint navigating after April 2020?
Yeah, so like I said, I had my name on the PGs and everything alongside that, and everything from the utilities in the facilities to the equipment to then the actual, you know, if you're an operator and you're an owner in a company, those 941s, that's your payroll and your taxes, they're in your name ultimately.
Yeah.
So at the peak of this, I was bleeding out exactly $262,000 per month that I was funneling myself.
Wow.
And to top it off, what ended up happening was, unfortunately, some of the partners decided to turn arrows against each other and against me because they could see the writing of the wall that we were going to close.
Wow.
So logically, they're going to work to preserve the capital and try and get their out and take as much as they can on the way out.
Wow.
So you have this cataclysmic event that's kind of pulling capital out of the company while trying to continue to funnel it. And ultimately,
Right.
there's just a window there that you can't deal with.
Right.
So for me, it really got to the point where I was staring down the barrel of personal bankruptcy, sold off real estate units, personal holdings that I had, literally down to the point where I was about to lose kind of my own place. And
Wow.
that's when finally some of the relief valves hit, because at that point I shuttered doors and said, we just can't do this anymore. Dealt with all the legal battles that were around it and then kind of just faced them head on. And once they were done, decided to kind of rise again.
Yeah. So, you know, this is going to be up to you how vulnerable you want to be, but you know, can you put any numbers behind sort of maybe where you were? And again, whether that's net worth or income or something at some point or just how, you know, number of real estate doors that you owned personally, something like that versus where you ended up almost losing your own residence, it sounds like.
Shuttered four real estate doors that were big facilities, everywhere from 15 to 30,000 square feet. My own personal STRs, two of them, and then I would say as a drop in net worth, I mean, literally got it down to the only thing that I had a positive. I would say, we'll say positive towards the net worth was basically that Equitable range of my own home, and that
Wow.
was it. So I mean, it was literally as deep as I didn't put down the
Yeah.
shovel. I just kept digging that damn hole.
So, and you mentioned STRs, and for any listeners who don't know, that's short-term rental. Just very quickly, what was your experience there? Since we have a lot of real estate investors, active and passive real estate investors on listening, how did you get into short-term rentals, and how did that go?
I think on the positive, they've all went fairly well, other than this inflection point. And where I've been able to see success is to be a active investor, but not a manager. There's a big difference between having faith in the operating team and making sure they can take care of it versus try and do it yourself. If my experience was, if you continue to do it yourself, you develop, it's very hard to remain neutral and know that it's a rental. The more you put yourself in there, the more you get a personal connection with that unit.
For
And so
sure.
when a chair breaks, you're like, oh my God, the world is ending,
Yeah.
versus it's a rental, who cares? Let's fix it.
It's a number on a spreadsheet at this point,
That's
right?
right. That's right.
Yeah.
And if you
No,
can make a positive at the end, then that's fine. So
absolutely.
follow the dollars and make sure that you're keeping a great P&L versus getting
Right.
your.
For sure. That's really good advice for the active, both the active and passive investor. But yeah, I've got single family rental properties, and we have a couple property managers. And then I'm a mortgage note investor, and we use a couple of, I've used five or six loan servicers out there, and they serve a similar function as a property manager, where they play that middle person or middle company between the borrower and the lender or note holder, and then on the rental side, the tenant and the landlord. Yes, I get involved in making decisions. Yes, I screen, help t select tenants or whatever, and make, do we go through foreclosure or eviction, that kind of thing. But I'm not. I don't, I'm not attached to the properties or even the borrowers. It helps me make better decisions, and not getting pulled into somebody's sob story if it's,
That's
not
right.
trustworthy, et cetera. But so you had to get rid of the STRs and get rid of lots of other real estate, it sounds like. And how close were you to filing bankruptcy?
It was a basically hand over the nuclear button and on a day-to-day basis of can we sustain this?
Wow.
So it was a lot of sleepless nights
Yeah.
and frankly burning years off my life is really how it felt.
Yeah, no, it's that's super stressful, and it affects everything else, in your personal life and everything else. I mean, sleep is critical, as as an athlete. Okay, that sounds like, I mean, that's really like, I mean, that's a huge, that's just a huge level of adversity and just a massive inflection point, like you said. So what did you do from there? After all that.
So it was a rebuilding period. Honestly, it was taking a step back and really assessing everything that was happening in my life. And so it is a matter of, is this something that I can continue on? Is this the right path or where to go from here? And I've been blessed to have good people open up doors for me kind of along my career, but I knew that despite what was happening, I still had a lot of skills, and now I felt like I was truly battle tested because I
Yeah.
feel like there's a lot of actually, I'm not going to say this nicely. I'll just say it. There's a lot of charlatans out there who are basically saying like, "Hey, I exited for 500 million. Buy my
Yeah.
book now, and you
Right.
can learn my process." And they're a dime a dozen. And
For
frankly,
sure.
I don't need winning lotto numbers. I need to follow people who have went through good and bad and know
Yes.
exactly how to protect the principal and grow capital for generational wealth.
No, absolutely. And that's with our mortgage note fund in particular, it's you're not gonna you can do better elsewhere as far as if you're seeking yield or upside. But we're all about protection and diversification. And but I'm more on the personal and mindset side, it's like I've been through some stuff recently where it's really challenging, but coming out through the other side, it's like not saying adversity is not hard anymore, but it just feels like smaller challenges, it's not that big of a deal. It keeps things in perspective, and I really do feel like I'm just stronger now having been through this. So
Right.
yeah.
Well, and frankly, for like my day-to-day job as a fiduciary, investors, my partners have a lot more faith in me because of the fact that I've been through that.
Right.
And they know I know one, what not to do, but number two is they know that I've put my own neck on the line. So it's one of those things where at the end of the day, I'm going to make sure to preserve and protect as much as I can. And at the end of the day, I'm going to make sure that I'm representing everybody perfectly.
So before we head into more of the rebuild and what you're up to now, looking back, say 2018, right? What could you have done differently? Obviously, we're not saying you should have predicted COVID or any of that stuff, but was it your ego that got in the way, that you thought you were, what did you just
Absolutely
get?
a
And I say that not, we don't know each other, but it's so I'm not insinuating that that's what it was. It's just that's a common thing where you have success and you think you're a genius, and maybe not.
Oh, that's That's exactly right. I mean, honestly, I had a lot of wins under my belt and was continued to go up. So, you continue to increase your risk tolerance as you go. So that's where I put my name on the line on things, which I shouldn't have. And, people on the outside now are like, oh, of course you shouldn't have. But when you're looking at a P&L and you see eight figures on there, if you just sign on the dotted line, it's really easy to grab that pen. It's really easy.
That's
So it's one of those things where you can say in retrospect, of course you shouldn't have done that, of course. But most of the great operators and investors that I know honestly have done that. They've put their name, they've declared bankruptcy, they've had issues because they put their name on the line. And so, you learn the hard way, or you have a good mentor who will tell you not to do it. I didn't have a good mentor on that, so I learned the hard way. And so I would say, to your point though, there's a lot that I would have changed. And this is now because I would consider myself a seasoned investor at this point. And so I could go on and on about, undercapitalizing, where you're getting death by indigestion from the influx of things coming in versus having capital to deploy and head that off. I could say that we truly didn't reach product market fit, which we could have probably retrenched in differently versus, constantly be in growth mode. But, this was a look at something that was more VC backable, right? And so when you're in a VC play, it is all or nothing. You're going out for abundance, you're going for unicorn status. And so when you do that, you can die. That's why 9 out of 10 VC companies die on the vine, is because they are going for a moonshot or nothing. And so this ended up being nothing. And I would say the other piece of that is, when you're doing this, make sure that you pick the right partners. And you're picking partners and staff and segregating the two by the ones that need a paycheck versus the ones who are with you on the overall mission, not the project. If they're project-based, guaranteed, if that project starts to go under, they're going to pull back their capital. It's just logical. You have to protect the principal. And that it's business. It's not anything personal, but it's business. And so, but if you're with partners who are in for the total mission, even if you have to retrench in, even if you have to close some units, they'll still be with you for thick and thin. Versus if you bring people just for a one-off, it gets bloody real quick when you have to, when you have to.
And I appreciate you sharing and being so vulnerable. And it's not always easy to talk about our failures. But the truth is, entrepreneurship is not for everyone. And it's an emotional roller coaster. Can be very challenging, very stressful. Can be very exciting and have lots of upside. But you got to know kind of you don't know exactly how it's the adversity is going to play out, but it's going to be there. So talk. Let's get to more of the abundance and the future now. So. How did who did what new partners did you meet? How did things materialize as far as what you're working on now?
Yeah, so it was I honestly met the partners through kind of a combination of past experiences and different projects together, working with pro teams from my past. And I kind of went back through the Rolodex, and knowing where I wanted to go really kind of kept my own North Star in mind. And again, you make a choice to either get up or you can just go have a day
Well,
job.
talk about that briefly before we get into more specifics. Like, how did you know where you wanted to go? Because I think that's a critical piece. Because if you don't know where you want to go and you start trying to, even if you have a great Rolodex, it really doesn't matter. You need to know where you're trying to go. So, how did you figure that out?
For me, I've always had this kind of inner thesis of just do good things and the money will follow. So I've known I've wanted to do that one-to-many help for a very long time. And when I had this kind of negative, event, it really taught me quickly on how to kind of protect my own house, how to form moats around it, and say, how do I protect what I'm building and create generational wealth? And so that really inspired me to say, well, you know what? I've been on one side of the table on the founder side, where I've had successful exits, and now I've had to BK a company. And so you take those two together and say, I can now play on the other side of the spectrum, where I'm helping entrepreneurs, I'm investing in them, I'm helping them grow and do it more effectively through operations, find product market fit, and grow. So at that point, to your point, it doesn't matter necessarily if you don't have a good Rolodex or having a Rolodex. So for me, I just put myself in the rooms that I wanted to be in. So I interacted with people on LinkedIn. I reached out to folks that were in my network, and I said, here's what I want to do, here's what I want to build. And so one of my now partners, we actually built a nonprofit startup studio. And so we started working across different medical verticals, real estate verticals, and really doing things in the upper Midwest. And that continued to scale to the point where now, where I'm at today, we built Champion Venture Partners as a asset firm that serves kind of both the accredited investor and the non-accredited investor. So it comes all the way back to that North Star, the mission for me of, if you were serving really a deep athlete population and the retail investor who, let's say, going all the way back to the start of our conversation, somebody who's an athlete, they may have a contract that's 10 million plus a year, but then if they get injured, it's gone the next day. And they slowly slide to a non-accredited investor status. They lose maybe some net worth, and now they're a retail investor. Well, why can we not give an alts for all mentality and have that retail investor still invest alongside some of the biggest names in sports and the accredited investor? And so through this transition, that's exactly what we formed. And so that's kind of what we're looking at today.
So is that like a Regulation A fund, or how does that work?
Good question. So actually what we designed is we actually designed a holding co where basically out of that hold co in the firm, we own different venture companies that are across different asset classes, and then we own direct assets that are revenue producing machines. So in that, it's like the GP stakes vehicle. And so we allow our credit investors to come into that GP stakes vehicle. On top of that, we are the sole LP and we own an RIA that serves an evergreen fund. The Evergreen Fund is a 40 Act fund, which then allows the retail investors to invest alongside that GP stakes vehicle, and we can invest across the sports asset class. So it's almost like a sports version of Berkshire Hathaway, is what it is.
That's really cool. That's awesome. So, and when did that all come together? How recently?
So we had been working on this, the COVID, pre-COVID. It oddly enough, we actually started really getting the ideas on this probably pre-COVID with my colleagues, but it wasn't really until post that we actually started pulling the trigger on it with legislation changes and getting going. We knew we didn't want to do a traditional 2-in-20 fund. We didn't want to do a special, SPV around this. We really wanted to make sure that this is the appropriate vehicle. And so we assembled this over years, but we officially launched January of 2024. So we just rounded our 1 year mark, and here we are growing so that this year. Actually, I'll say it at this. The end of we're actually announcing some big things at Super Bowl this year. And by the end of 2026, we'll probably be at about 1.25 billion assets under management.
That's awesome. And can you name any of your partners right now?
So actually, yes, I'll say a couple of the partners. We are a blind pool, but so we formed this with a gentleman named Jeff McDermott, who is a real estate just mogul extraordinaire. He's fantastic and really smart on the GP stakes and investment side. And then Marcus Colston, who's a, I should actually know this by heart, but I think he's a 10-year NFL veteran,
I
played with
think
the New
that's
Orleans,
right.
10 years with the New Orleans Saints. And so he and I, we've been good friends for a long time. We actually worked together for a company that serves the NHL and timing gates. And we got together before COVID, and then post-COVID and all this inflection, that's where I'm like, guys, let's do something together.
Nice. I used to love watching him, and I think he's going to be on our show soon. Used to love watching Drew Brees throw tons of passes to him. So,
Well, I think you'll like it too because he has a very similar path, and we're cut from a similar cloth. Although he's much more reserved than I am, he's maybe it's the fighter mentality versus the wide receiver mentality. But he's a gentleman who transitioned out of sport, and really made sure that same thing that he couldn't do football forever. And he is probably twice as good of a human being as he ever was a football player.
that's awesome. I wouldn't say most NFL wide receivers are super reserved, but I do remember him being like that. So, not that I know him, but just from watching from a distance. But yeah, so okay, so anything else you want to add as far as what you're up to today with your company?
I touched on this briefly, so I'll go a little bit more in depth. So we're going to be at Super Bowl down in New Orleans this year. So we're announcing that Evergreen Fund. And so the Evergreen Fund, like I said, the cool thing about this is we're investing across the boards in sports asset class. So emerging teams and leagues to real estate alongside sports, everything from sports tech down to sports medicine and fan engagement and experiences, both for the athlete and the teams, or I'm sorry, athlete and the individuals. And so what's cool about this is I won't share, but we have some very big names on our cap table. And so people get to invest alongside the biggest names in sports and the sports they love. And then if they love real estate, it's part of our portfolio too. So not only do you just get to dabble in real estate, if that's kind of the niche and the thesis, but then you get to be diversified across something that's outperformed the markets for the past 60 years. So I would tell everybody to take a look at what we're doing, join our wait list if you'd like. And it's a kind of a cool experience to be part of.
That's awesome. And like you said, it's for accredited and non-accredited investors, right?
Yeah, non-accredited investors can literally even come in for $500. So this isn't something where I'm doing a hard pitch to come into the fund. This is just join our wait list and come part of the action and watch.
Yeah, awesome. Before I get to some other more rapid fire questions, looking back, what's one mindset shift that you think we can learn or take from your story that we can put to work as far as putting for the investor listening, a mindset shift that they need to make to create a state of mental fitness to be able to stay take decisive action in investing. So what's a mindset shift that you've used that the listener can use to just take action in real estate investing specifically?
You know, I've kind of mentioned this a couple different times, but to really hit it on the nose on two different spots. Number one is you have to have that abundance mindset. So again, you have a choice. So I don't care if you need to, listen to Metallica or Cardi B or whatever you need to yourself up in your headphones, or if you need to listen to, a Joe Rogan podcast or obviously your podcast or what you need to do, but make sure that you can get yourself off the couch to make a decision. And then part two is make sure that you are making that decision with the best fiduciary and fiscal mind that you can versus getting your heart into it. If you do something to follow the dollars because, you really feel bad for this renter or you really want to replace this couch or there's something going on with your short-term rental, don't make the actual financial decision.
Love that. Awesome. All right, here are a few personal questions. What is something that people misunderstand about you, Nick?
Ooh,
This
that's
trips
a
people up sometimes.
Oh yeah, that's a great question. I think that if this is contrary, and people always laugh at me when I say this because former MMA fighter, I always tell people I'm not that aggressive, and they're like, okay, usually burst out laughing. But I firmly believe that you can't get what you don't ask for, and so I usually ask. I make an ask often early in relationships because I feel like I have a very good human barometer, and so. If I ask for something, it's not because I'm overly aggressive in business. It's literally because I feel a relationship and human connection, and I want to surround myself with good people. And so if I want to work with somebody, I'm going to ask for it really soon.
Yeah, I love that. And if you feel like you're on a mission to do good and serve others, then you're going to need some resources to be able to accomplish that mission. So it's not really a selfish ask. You mentioned that you alluded to the fact that you wouldn't have listened to yourself, when you tore your ACL, you probably wouldn't have listened to some solid advice. But if you could go back and give your 18-year-old self some advice, what would that be?
Oh, yeah, because I wouldn't have listened. Honestly, it really just comes down to, and this kind of fits the adversity to abundance, is it just comes down to it's going to be okay. Like in that time, you really feel like the world is caving in on
Sure.
you. And, it doesn't matter if it's, you lost the deal, you feel like your identity's gone, you're injured. There's always this point where you really feel like you're at the bottom of the pit, right? So, the nice thing is there's always a ladder. There's always a way out.
Yeah.
It's never, ever, ever the end.
I love that. That's really good. I mean, it is hard to see in the moment, that the storm will end, right? But it will. And if you hang in there, it's
Saw
not.
actually a cool write-up. So I'm going to use this because I went to NDSU and a bison. So the bison itself is one of the only animals in the world that actually, when there's a big snowstorm, they go into the snowstorm versus hunker down because they know if they go into the storm, it'll be quicker. So head down and go
Awesome.
for it.
That's really cool. A little bit off the wall here. If you were given $10 million tomorrow, personally, not for your business ventures, could be, but what would you do with it?
Oh my gosh, invest. Create generational wealth. I mean, I think everybody who is at that point of investing in real estate or where they're at, they really need to get with an attorney and a wealth planner, your financial advisor. Make sure that you're stacking yourself and creating moats so that you have a trust. You have trust for your family. Make sure that you're stacking things in there appropriately between assets and actual cash. So for me, it would be diversify, invest quickly.
Love that. What's one challenge that you're facing in your business right now?
This is part of, running a firm is that the markets dictate a lot. Luckily that sports is, like I said before, has outperformed the markets year over year. And it's something that is relatively recession proof because people love sports.
Yeah.
Even during COVID, they may not have been in the stands, but memorabilia sales were through the roof, right? Like viewership
Sure.
and media broadcasting was through the roof.
Right.
So there's always a plug there, which is nice. And that's all that to say is there are market inflections that you have to be aware of. So for me, the most difficult thing is staying on to the trends of what the market's doing and then informing our LPs of what that's going to look like.
Got it. Yeah, I imagine that does change fairly, can change fairly rapidly. So, in your opinion, what's one of the most important personality traits that someone needs to be successful in your industry or investing in general?
Obsession.
Obsession.
You need to be obsessed with what you're doing so that you know the ins and outs, you can see the blind spots, and you can actually further your career in what you're doing with it.
That's really good. Haven't had that answer yet, so that's awesome. How about something controversial that you see in, you know, your in your industry that you could talk about?
All right, how about this one? So controversial is every single time that I talk with somebody and I say, yeah, I invest in sports. Like, oh my gosh, do you own a portion of blah, 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 blah team? They
Right.
always think of the big five, right? So your MLS, NHL, NFL, MLB, NBA. That's what
Right.
everybody thinks of. And controversial because maybe it's more contrary to public belief, but those increase in valuation over time. They do not make money. You would be shocked. What makes money is the media and broadcasting and all the downstream things along with the team. The team is the vanity item. Everything else is what prints cash for sports.
Interesting. I didn't realize that. So over time they can sell for a profit, hopefully, right? Sell the team, but they're
Yeah,
not
and I mean,
printing income. Yeah.
exactly. And you're talking about, 50 families in the US that are able to buy a team, right? And so, of
Right.
course, you can be a minority partner or you could be part of like Arctos and some of like the big groups that invest in teams. That's
Yeah.
absolutely true. So you can be a super minority partner. You absolutely can do that. You have to stroke a big enough check to make that happen, which is, north like five,
Substantial.
seven figures or eight figures. But again, it's a vanity item. You're not going to see dividends off that. You're going to see growth. You might exit someday, but it truly is just a nice little
Interesting.
trophy.
How has financial abundance made your life better, whether that's now or previously?
Well, I mean, obviously, finance can be a huge stressors for somebody, but I would say that a lot of financial stressors is because you've created those pinch points yourself. Whether you've stretched yourself too thin, you've gotten in over your skis, you don't understand the markets, and you're placing capital where you shouldn't. Again, it comes back to it's all a choice. But truly, when you find that place of financial abundance where you kind of retrench in, know, and do smart deployments of capital and investments,
Yeah.
it really lets you take a big breath because then you know not only is your own family set, but then you're starting to work for your kids. You're starting to work for your kids' kids. And then you can create this generational piece where that I would say it creates this wonderful blend of making it so your family has to want for nothing, but if they see you working hard, they want to earn everything.
That's really good. That's We've got five or six really good quotes from this episode already. What is a book or two that you could recommend, Nick?
Ooh, actually, I got a couple sitting around here. I really, even though I have not been briefed in this call, there's one called Smart Brevity, which is a fantastic one. If you're looking kind of the art of a deal and talking to individuals, whether that's on email, trying to get a deal across the table, I really enjoy that one. Another one that I'm actually reading right now, I literally have it next to me, is called First
Okay.
by Dean DeLisle. And it's a digital business influence, which is fantastic. And Dean is a guy who's ran a broker-dealer firm and a retail investor firm for decades and is a genius on it.
That's awesome. I'm gonna have to check both of those out. Nick Edwards, what is one question I have not asked that you wish I had?
Honestly, you've covered a lot. I mean, this has been fantastic. I would say the only thing that maybe you haven't directly asked, but we've kind of surmised is, you've asked kind of my why and the North Star of where to go.
Yeah.
But what I would encourage anybody who's listening to do is like, I always say my why is that one to many and trying to get, thousands of individuals and affect their lives. But the reason why I want to affect thousands of individuals all comes back to my wife and two little kids. If I can show for them what I'm doing for others, hopefully they'll do the same.
Love that. So it's bigger than just you, right, Nick?
Yep. Everybody's got to find their super why. If they don't have their why written down, then you're going to be stabbing in the dark for a long time.
Absolutely. And like we said before, when then you have that mission and then it creates this energy and this attraction that people want to work with you and they want to, jump on board and, it's just it's contagious. So, Nick, where can our listeners find you online?
So they can find me on LinkedIn just under Nick Edwards. They can also find me at Champion Venture Partners.
Fantastic. Anything else you want to add before we get out of here?
I just appreciate you having me on. This has been great today.
Yeah, thank you for your time. Appreciate you. And to the listener out there, we thank you for your most valuable resource, and that is your attention coupled with your time. So thanks, everyone. We appreciate it. Take care.
Thank you for joining us on From Adversity to Abundance. We hope today's episode has equipped you with valuable insights and practical advice to elevate your real estate journey. For more inspiring stories and resources, visit us at www.adversitytoabundance.com. If this episode has inspired you, please share it with a friend who could also benefit from our conversation. Together, let's turn adversity into abundance. Until next time, keep building your mental fitness and your real estate empire.
Hey there, it's Jamie Bateman. Ever felt boxed in by life's challenges? Dive into my new book, From Adversity to Abundance, Inspiring Stories of Mental, Physical, and Financial Transformation, available now on Amazon. From a former bank robber's redemption to a young entrepreneur's victory over hurdles, these stories are not just inspiration. They're the roadmaps to your transformation. Whether for you or as a powerful gift to friends and family, especially those who might not tune into podcasts, this book is a beacon to a life of abundance. Ignite that inner fire and set your course to the life you've imagined. Purchase yours today on Amazon and light the path for someone you love.